Welcome to another episode of Tell Me More. My name is Luke Stair. Dr. Wiles and I are here talking about the glory of God and the significance of the book of Exodus throughout the entirety of Scripture. We enjoyed this conversation. We hope that you do too. We are here making another episode of Tell Me More. Katie is not with us today. Hanging out with her kids, good thing to do, being a good mom. But we're going to talk about Exodus and Together for God's Glory, which is our new sermon series. We just started on Sunday. Dr. Wiles, how are you feeling about it so far?
You know what? First of all, I love the book of Exodus. And I'm actually teaching through it at my pastor's Bible study on Wednesdays. We're just going verse by verse in Exodus. And it is just such a, first of all, it's just a compelling narrative. As a matter of fact, when I was a kid, Cecil B. DeMille made this landmark movie, The Ten Commandments, and starring Charlton Heston as Moses, and it was incredibly successful, and I think maybe controversial for some people because he took some editorial license, building narratives around Moses and what he was like when he was in Egypt, and et cetera, et cetera. But regardless, it was, for the most part, well-received, which I found quite interesting that Easter weekend on Saturday night, I don't remember when Ten Commandments came out. I mean, it's been a long time ago. It was shown again on ABC, on national television. And then Cindy and I just started watching this new kind of documentary on Netflix.
It's I haven't watched it.
Yeah, we've watched the first episode or part of the first episode on Moses, the Testament, I think it's called. And it's just interesting that here's this guy, Moses, whose principal story really is told in the Exodus. And he is at the heart of a story of redemption that's connected to both Jews today, Muslims, and Christians. And so in this documentary, you have scholars, pastors, I'm not really sure who all the representatives are, but from all three of those faiths, talking about the role of Moses, the experiences of Moses. So here, as I said Sunday morning, I think it's difficult to exaggerate the impact of this story.
Huge.
Yeah, it's just pick a story bigger in the Old Testament than this one that's had such an impact worldwide across religions. I think you'd be hard-pressed outside of creation, I would probably say. So I love the book of Exodus. I've always loved it, and I think it's just worth study, reflection, giving attention to it, all those kinds of things. And so I'm excited about this new series.
Okay, so you called it Together for God's Glory. So let's talk about what glory means, because I think that's a churchy word that we can throw around a lot and not necessarily get the meaning of the word.
Right. Well, as you know, and all, if y'all have been listening for a while, you know, Luke is our resident Hebrew scholar. And so
it's a very loose way of framing Hebrew
scholar. You have your Hebrew Bible in front of you right here. And my Hebrew is not very good. But kavod is this word that's usually translated glory, which really means weight.
Yeah, it's heavy.
Or heavy, yeah. W-E-I-G-H-T, weight. Which really means substance, is the way I would interpret it, that something has value and meaning and significance. It has weight. If we say this has weight, that's what I think that word would mean. And so in Exodus 33:34, Moses says to God, "Show me your glory." In the way I would interpret that, the glory of God is the outward manifestation of his essence, of his character, of his nature. And so God basically tells Moses in that story, I'm going to pass by, but you won't be able to take my glory. It'll be way too much for you. But I will at least let you have a glimpse of who I am. And so then when the text says he starts proclaiming his name, the way I would read that is just the essence of who he is all of a sudden on display, both manifested in this incredible appearance of God's presence, but also in the proclamation of who he is, that he's compassionate, that he is faithful, he is loving, he is forgiving, he is gracious. He also is righteous. He judges. And so you've got this perfect combination of grace and righteousness, of of truth and justice. They're just bound together perfectly in God. And so God is demonstrating to Moses who he is, and now his glory is going to accompany Israel through their journey. He's going to rest upon the tabernacle, so to speak. And so the glory of God to me is the manifestation of just who he is, you know, just his essence, his character. Because I think that the reason I love that text, and I feel like I read it often, is because in the New Testament expression of it, now that we're on this side of Jesus, Jesus came to be one who showed us the glory of mm-hmm. God as a human being. So the glory of God, all of that essence, character, nature of God is on display through the life of Jesus and the right. person of Jesus. And then he's challenging us to live that way and be that ourselves and reflect that glory. And that's really where the challenge is. When Paul says that we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God, that means that we don't manifest it appropriately mm-hmm. to the right level, to the right degree. And yet that's God's desire. And so that's what I love about 2 Corinthians 3, where Paul says, now we have been transformed, you know, and the image of God is supposed to be on display in us, and the glory of God in an ever increasing way should be on display in us. And so that's where it connects to us, that think about if you go back and read Exodus 34 and read about God's character, and then you ask yourself the question, well, how much of that is on display in me? How much of that is manifested in my life? Where do I fall short in those areas? Well, I think that's a great question. It's a journey of discipleship and obedience to the Lord to where God's glory could be manifested through us. So it's kind of my take on it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad Moses asked for it. I'm glad God let Moses know you can't take it. You know, there's too much, because the Lord revealed himself. It's almost like I read one theologian who said that Exodus is about both the revelation of God and the hiddenness of God. That mm-hmm. on the one hand, okay, the Lord does reveal himself, but on the other hand, he can't fully reveal himself. And so there's right. like limitations of his presence, if you will, you know. So because it's fearful, you know, even the Jews who were, you know, not actually in present with Moses had this sense that there's fire on the mountain, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah. and so there's something completely
yeah,
beyond us.
Yeah.
Here.
What is happening? Yeah. So, yeah. Mm. And, I think the glory of God is one of those churchy words, but to me, that's what I appreciate about Exodus 34. I think it gives it a little bit more definitive kinds of explanation, if you will.
Yeah. So if you were going to explain what glory means to a person outside the church in one sentence, what would you say?
I would probably say that glory is just the goodness and essence of the only God who is.
Beautifully said. There you go, people.
So probably what I'd say. And now I would follow that up by saying, if I'm following him, then I should start to look like him, you know, mm-hmm. just like your children have some manifestations of you.
Right.
We should have some manifestations to demonstrate we belong to this family, you know. So, and the glory of God is the way that happens.
Mm. Okay. Well,
hopefully.
Yes, you talked about a lot of really kind of big, heavy, right. important things on Sunday morning.
In Exodus.
Yeah. But the thing about Exodus is it is in so many ways this core story, not just for the Old Testament, but the New Testament. Mm-hmm. You talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you referenced that to really understand what Jesus is doing in the New Testament, mm-hmm. you've got to understand this story. And I was wondering if you could talk mm-hmm. a little mm-hmm. bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think first of all, you know, I'm not Jewish. It's not my ethnicity. It's not my background. So I wasn't, you know, wasn't reared, you know, in a Jewish home. And so, I think that it may be hard for us as Gentiles to understand how this story is just woven into the fabric of religious Jewishness, if mm-hmm. I can put it that way. I just don't think you can understand Jewish theology or their theological imagination or even their sense of identity as the people of God without this story, you know, because it's such a powerful story. You know, as I said Sunday morning, you know, when you read, you know, the Greeks, the Romans, you know, they have these fanciful tales of their origin. You know, you've got the struggle between this twin, Romulus, these twins, Romulus and Remus, and they're abandoned, you know, by the gods on the bank of the Tiber River, and the she-wolf sees them, and she just kind of steps in and lets them suckle, you know, so they can survive. And eventually they're rescued, you know, by this hero, and he brings them in, and then they have this kind of epic battle, you know, between the sibling rivalry that was so fascinating to the ancient people. And, you know, Romulus rises up and kind of overcomes his brother, and he's viewed as the righteous one, if you will, the hero, and he establishes this whole kingdom, if you will. And the Romans have this idea of nobility, and, you know, they have this story that nobody else has. And I think if you could have gone back and interviewed the Romans at the height of their empire, they would probably say, you know, man, the Greeks were good, the Assyrians were good, the Persians were good, but nobody was designed to rule like Rome. You know, our whole story, you know, is just that this is why we're on planet Earth. Well, what's the Hebrew story? Well,
we were slaves.
That's right.
We didn't know anything. Yeah. We were trapped.
We couldn't help
ourselves.
Some
crazy stuff happened, and God made a way for us, and then we got stuck in a desert for 40 years.
Yes.
And then had a hard time conquering the land that we came to live in.
That's right. I mean, what a contrasting ancient story of identity.
Yeah, this is not the story. If you were an ancient person.
Right.
This is not the story that you would write for yourself.
That's right.
This is not the polished, pretty,
that's right,
what a strong ancient people we are, right, kind of narrative. Mm-hmm.
It's very humble.
We were slaves.
That's right.
And we struggled.
That's right.
We couldn't do it.
And God had to intervene.
Yeah.
And so, but the fact is, He did. And so for, I think today, even today, there's this sense of God's love, and can I say God's favoritism, or I mean, word it as you would like. The point is that God rescues. He rescues his people.
God chooses this people that he's already chosen, and he rescues them.
Right. And so I think that's just woven in somehow to an identity. And so if you go back to the first century, the Jews had that sense about them. And there they were, even though they were living in the promised land, it was occupied by these pagans. And I think also for us, it's probably hard for us to even understand the disdain that religious Jews would have had toward the Romans, you know, because they're just pagans. They have no respect for God. You know, they want to put the Roman eagles up on the temple, you know, and bring their images of their Caesars in when the Jews... So you can't make an image of a god, you know, all this. So it's almost like everything you can think of that's the opposite of Judaism. The Romans just did it, you know. And so there they are, shackled by them. They'd already risen up during the Maccabean era before the first century.
That's where the festival of Hanukkah comes from. That's why you don't see it in the Old Testament, but it's
the intertestamental period. Yeah. And so they'd had these skirmishes of limited freedom, but nothing had ever really worked. And so here they are longing for somebody to do something. Well, this is the story, you know, for them, that the Lord's going to send another deliverer.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to come, a Messiah. He's going to be like Moses.
And so Jesus shows up. He goes into the wilderness for 40 days.
Absolutely.
A lot of New Testament scholars will point out that Matthew, out of all the gospel authors, most tries to display Jesus as the new Moses, the new and improved Moses. Mm-hmm. So you think about the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus goes up on the mountain, teaches a new law,
that's right,
a new commandment I give you.
Right.
And then he feeds the 5,000 with bread that multiplies. I mean, so Matthew especially tries to pick up on these Mosaic themes and carries them through. But
and someone greater than Moses is here, you know, is that sense. But really in the theological, spiritual lineage of Moses.
Yeah.
You know, not physically.
He doesn't do away with Moses.
Right. But either. He's in the ilk, if you will. And that's why I feel like if you're going to understand the role that Jesus played and how he even viewed himself as Messiah, it's just so connected to the Exodus. I mean, the whole emphasis on redemption and freedom. Jesus said, if you'll know the truth will set you free. Well, the Jews were longing to be free in Egypt, at least toward the end of their time there. They're longing to be free from the Romans. So the whole concept of freedom. However, theologically, the freedom that's offered in the scripture is not the somewhat American version of just right. self-determinism, where you can just, you're just free to
be. I can be whoever I want to be. I can do whatever I want to do.
Right. Yeah. That's attractive. And I get it. There's a sense in which politically and all that, you know, as a nation, this whole idea we wanted to be free. I understand all that. But theologically, you know, the freedom was being set free from what was binding you and inhibiting you so that you can worship God and serve God and give God glory. You know, that's when that's what God told Moses, tell Pharaoh, let my people go so they can come serve me. So they can come worship me, come be my people. And to me, that influences theologically the whole concept of redemption in the New Testament. What are we set free from?
The tyranny of sin.
Yeah. But what are we delivered to? And that is to the glory of God.
Right.
To worship God, to live as God's people. So it's a freedom, yes, but it's a freedom that's governed by a relationship with God. And so that's also in the Exodus story, you know, and then the whole idea of even exodus, even the name of the book in Greek, it's the way out. And Jesus is the way up, if you will, the way to live, capturing that kind of imagery. And I think probably the final, you know, you look for clues all the way through, but N.T. Wright talks a lot about this, about the new Exodus in some of his writings, but then you get to the Passover week where Jesus decides this is the week to basically, you know, like in Mark's gospel in particular, it's like Jesus is operating in hiddenness. You know, you've got mm-hmm. that whole secrecy motif in Mark's gospel, you know, what one theologian called the messianic secret, and meant something a little different by it than I think we do, but still. Where Jesus would constantly say, don't tell anybody who I am, don't reveal, you don't know enough about me, doesn't even let the demons speak. And then all of a sudden on Palm Sunday, he just, here I am, you know, and now he takes the time during Passover to offer a true message of redemption and hope and future. And then all these lambs are being sacrificed, you know, and he's the sacrificial lamb, and he will take the Passover meal and that whole celebration and reinterpret it for us into what we today call the Lord's Supper. And so that's why I was trying to say Sunday morning. If you want to delve more deeply and connect what Jesus was doing and saying, you have to study the book of Exodus.
Yeah.
It's just so much on display in the life of Jesus. And I think these New Testament theologians saw it and recognized it for what it was. And I think that's probably why Matthew places so much emphasis on it, you know, from the symbolism that's there. It's really yeah. powerful. So that's why for us, I'm excited about the journey through Exodus. You know, we've got every week we've got focal passages that we're focused on, but I don't have a problem with our people reading the whole book during the spring.
And shameless plug, if you are wanting to do a much deeper dive into the book of Exodus, mm-hmm. all of the Pastor's Bible Study, mm-hmm. Pastor's Bible Studies mm-hmm. are up on our website.
That's right.
Under the streaming section, you could go back mm-hmm. and you could watch mm-hmm. all of those from the beginning if right. you're wanting to do a right. much more verse-by-verse approach to what's happening. Because
exactly.
we're kind of hitting the highlights, so to speak, through this sermon series, mm-hmm. the kind of mm-hmm. theological mm-hmm. significant passages. They're right. all significant, but you can't preach all of Exodus over the next few weeks.
That's right.
So if you want a deeper dive, check out Pastor.
Yeah, we're going slowly on Wednesday mornings through it all, and you know, marching through the plagues right now and just watching God basically unravel an Egyptian worldview and overwhelm the gods and goddesses of the Egyptians and transform Israel's worldview to where they understand he's the only God, the only true God. And this is a comprehensive, holistic victory for the God of Israel, you know, this story. So even leading up to the actual Exodus, you have the very nature and power and glory of God on display, you know, just by what he's doing through the plagues, you know. So it's a really fascinating story to me. And that's why I think it's worth, it's kind of like, on the one hand, if you want to understand to me the whole concept of redemption and understanding who we are as the people of God, the image of God in us, God's design, God's purpose, and where all this came from and why it can all connect through the story of Israel. Well, you've got to read Genesis. You have to spend some time in Yep. Genesis. But then if you want to make the next step, well, you've got to have Exodus. And so these two books are just incredibly influential in our journey as Christian theologians and followers of Jesus. They just are. So.
Absolutely. And then one last thing I wanted to talk about. You talked about the name of God right. in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
You referenced Hebrew vowel pointing right. in your sermon.
Tell us about that, Luke. You're the Hebrew guy. Explain it to us.
If you are just listening and you're like, what is vowel pointing? Why does this matter? Why don't we know what vowels are in God's name?
Right.
Because I think sometimes people who don't know the Bible very well look at that and they think, oh man, you Christians are crazy. You don't even know how to pronounce God's name.
That's right.
What are you doing?
That's right.
What do you even believe in? The first answer is it's complicated. So if you...
Right. It's complicated.
We're going to get really nerdy on Tell Me More right mm-hmm. now. So if you have enjoyed it thus far and don't want to nerd out about Hebrew, enjoy your week. We'll see you later. For the rest of you, we'll keep going, but... In Hebrew, you have letters. So there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, mm-hmm. or as we would say, Aleph Beit, mm-hmm. which is a good Hebrew joke. Those are the first two letters, Aleph and Beit. But all of those are actually vowels. Mm-hmm. Not vowels, consonants.
Sorry,
mm-hmm. I misspoke. All of those 22 letters are consonants. Mm-hmm. And so when you read Hebrew, if you were to learn Hebrew, read Hebrew, and you open up your Hebrew Bible, I brought mine. I'm on Exodus 3. You can see there are these lines of text if you're watching live. If not, mm-hmm. I'm holding up my Hebrew Bible.
Right.
But there are lines of text, and so you have the consonants. That's what was originally placed in the text. Some of those consonants serve as placeholders for vowels in some cases. So the letter V in Hebrew is a vav, sometimes can signify that you actually have an O or a U in that word. So if you think about the word shalom, if you would actually write the consonants of that word in Hebrew, you have sheen, mm-hmm. which is an SH, then you have lamed L, and then you actually have a V, a vav, and then a mem. But you don't say the vav. You just know, based on context, that this word is shalom. Mm-hmm. I don't say shalovim. Mm-hmm. It's this. And that's mm-hmm. most of the time Hebrew words have three consonants that you're working off of. We're, again, really nerdy.
It's okay.
So you can actually read the Hebrew Bible with no vowel pointings.
Right.
And for actually most of the Old Testament's history, that's what people did. The vowel pointings got added by a group called the Masoretes between the years 500 and 1000. Mm-hmm. So if you think the Middle Ages, medieval Judaism, mm-hmm. that's when this happens. That's when mm-hmm. we get vowel pointings to the mm-hmm. text. Mm-hmm. They are really helpful. They were mm-hmm. written to help preserve the text, standardize mm-hmm. pronunciation, mm-hmm. do all of those good things. Mm-hmm. So when you think about, well, why don't we know how to say Yahweh, which right. again is an interpretation of what vowels we think it would be. Mm-hmm. It's rooted in the Hebrew verb for to be. Mm-hmm. Speaks mm-hmm. to the just eternal existence of God. Mm-hmm. That's why we have I am who I am. I will be who I will be. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. And so if you think about Jehovah, which I think you referenced on mm-hmm, Sunday, mm-hmm. that was an attempt from some German scholars to add in what they thought the vowels might be. Mm-hmm. So Jehovah is not some better name for God. Right. It's some scholar's guess. A good mm-hmm, attempt mm-hmm. on what those vowels should be. So mm-hmm. if you like Jehovah, mm-hmm. some German scholars mm-hmm. thought that was a good stab mm-hmm, at this. Mm-hmm. But if you're a Jew... and you were to read the word Yahweh, YHVH, in the text, you would actually say the word Adonai, which is the Hebrew word for Lord, mm-hmm. which is why when we translate it into English, you get the Lord, and Lord is in all caps, which you referenced. Mm-hmm. So again, that was a very nerdy...
It's okay. But it's a good word to us, because there are people in our day who say, this is the name of God, so Allah for the Muslim, mm-hmm. or... Jehovah's Witnesses say, well, Jehovah is God's name. Well, actually, we're not completely sure how to actually pronounce those consonants with vowels. We're doing the best we can with Yahweh. And there's a, and maybe it's also hard for us to understand because we're not as, I think as Westerners, we're not as concerned with profaning things.
We're not as reverent.
Yeah. So for a Jewish rabbi who's fearful about taking the Lord's name in vain or misusing the Lord's name or blaspheming the name of the Lord, like you said, they wouldn't even pronounce the name of the Lord. You know,
they're just going to replace it with Adonai.
Put another Lord. Word for master or Lord there. And that was just so common. And that's hard for us to even imagine that that's what was going on. So I'm not bothered by the fact that we don't know for sure how to pronounce it. We know that it's Lord. We know that he is our Lord. And this was the way he wanted to be referred to. And that in the way he chose to communicate it to me, theologically, in its essence, he's basically declaring, I just am. I've always been, I always will be. I am who I'm saying I am. And it's personal. He's a personal God mm-hmm. who's eternally existent. And so I'm really good with that. And so when Jesus obviously plays on that, as I said Sunday morning, he gets in real trouble because everybody listening knew what he meant. You know, when he said, before Abraham was, I am. Well, no wonder they're tearing their clothes.
Yeah, that's the most blasphemous thing you could. If you won't even in synagogue read God's name that he gives himself.
Right.
Then, of course, you're going to be furious when Jesus says it in reference to mm-hmm. himself.
Right. And he's a human being right in front of them. And some of them know who he is. You know, this is Joseph's son. And, for him to claim to be older than Abraham, you know, and basically declare an eternal existence as a claim to be divine. And then as John tells the story, Jesus constantly alludes to it with, I am this, or I am the good shepherd, or you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life, or I am the resurrection and the life. I mean, it's like Jesus over and over is making this profound claim and giving us an understanding of how he's living it out in front of us. Again, that's why to me the book of Exodus is so much a part of the messianic role and ministry of Jesus. You know? And so, you know, if you wanted to do kind of a companion study of Exodus, you know, and you wanted to look beyond the Gospels, that's why the book of Hebrews is so helpful. You know, you've got this Hebraic preacher, whoever he was, who writes the book of Hebrews, and he basically gives you this comparison between who Christ is and who Moses was and what the new covenant is and how it's connected to the old covenant. Mm-hmm. And it's just the flowering, if you will, the full flower of the new covenant and its connection to the old covenant is just theologically laid out in the book of Hebrews. And so, you know, if you didn't know better, it would almost be like God actually put all this together for us so that it all actually makes sense.
Oh, how about that?
You know, it really does make sense that it's holistic. That's why the Bible to me has stood the test of time. It's just endured so many attacks and misunderstandings and misinterpretations. The Bible has stood strong because it's truth, and it really does, as challenging as it can be sometimes to study and to understand, it does offer an incredible, compelling narrative about reality.
Yes.
You know, and it really shapes our understanding of truth. So
I'm looking forward to talking about it more.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Me too.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone, and we will be back next week, and hopefully Katie will be back with us. And we're going to just keep enjoying and savoring the book of Exodus together.
Amen.
Listening to the Tell Me More podcast today. You can subscribe to this podcast on your app of choice, or you can visit us at fbca.org to find out more information about the podcast and our church. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.